This is the Berkeley Signal.
As it may be for states so framed to be shaken, yet since all that comes into being must decay, even a fabric like this will not endure forever but will suffer dissolution. That's a quote from Plato's The Republic, and it is what Chris Hedges opens his new book with. America, the Farewell Tour is a survey of contemporary American ills, such as unemployment, industrial blight, opioid addiction, as well as racism, sexism, and other forms of hate. The book is based on Hedges' travels through various parts of the U.S. that often remain invisible from mainstream media coverage, and therefore our national psyche. In America, the Farewell Tour, Hedges explains our myriad societal ills as the hallmarks of a dying empire. Welcome, Chris, to our program.
Thanks, Nolly.
You have written many, many books that have become bestsellers, and this particular book is a very interesting book for the age that we're in. It feels to me like it's different from your previous books, but it is a culmination of some of the work you've been doing in books like Empire of Illusion and Death of the Liberal Class. Tell me where you traveled and the kinds of people you talked to when you put this book together, because it includes voices that are often left out of our mainstream media.
So the idea of the book was kind of taken from Emile Durkheim's book on suicide, which was published in 1897. Durkheim I admire very much as a sociologist because he, like W.E.B. Du Bois, went out and interviewed extensively. I mean, you read the Philadelphia Negro, I think there were literally over 1,000 interviews Du Bois carried it out to give you a profile of that community, how they lived, what they endured. And Durkheim did the same thing on suicide. And so he wanted to explore what are the forces that lead people to carry out acts of self-annihilation. And he pinpointed the breakdown of social bonds, what Hannah Arendt calls atomization. And we see deeply destructive pathological behaviors rippling across the American landscape. The opioid addiction, suicide is an epidemic, especially the highest rates of suicide are middle-aged white men. Gambling, it's not a small issue. The numbers are in the book. Gamblers have the highest rates of attempted suicide, and they lose everything. Their jobs, their financial stability, their marriages, often their health. Hate groups are a product of a diseased society, gripped by what Durkheim calls anomy or rulelessness. So by that he means the established or accepted rules of a society. I mean, for instance, if you work hard, you'll get ahead, if you get an education, if you obey the law, or that somehow working within the confines of the structure, if you respect that structure and the rules of the structure, will allow you to lead a productive and self-satisfied life. They're all gone. And the human cost of this is heartbreaking. And so I set out, as you point out, to go to these places that are gripped by these kinds of pathologies and write about what it's doing to the American population. So I was in over 10 states. I wrote out of San Francisco on the BDSM cults around kink.com because sexual sadism is always a part of a decayed society. But I was in California, Utah, Pennsylvania, New York, including in upstate New York at one point, around a bonfire in a rural area outside of Binghamton with members of the Proud Boys, the Knights of the Alt-Right, and the Three Percenters living in mortal fear that somebody might Google me. Gambling, which I wrote out of the Trump Taj Mahal in Atlantic City. The last chapter, Freedom, I talk a lot about the resistance within the American prison system and am out interviewing Sadiq Hassan, who's on death row, who led the 1993 Lucasville prison uprising, the longest occupation of a prison for 11 days, which was a remarkable uprising because in Ohio, half the prison population is white. Most of them are white Aryans. And he built an alliance so that when they retook the prison, the walls were painted with graffiti that said black and white together, no race, only convict race. That was the book. It was a book that I spent 2 years on and that I went to these forgotten pockets of the United States, which are no longer covered by the commercial media at all.
Did you start writing the book or researching it when Trump took office or when he won the election?
No. Trump hadn't announced. It was 2 years ago. Right. When I gave the title to Simon & Schuster, they all thought I was being hysterical. But of course, after the election of Trump, it didn't become so outrageous.
So some of these societal ills that you tackle in your book are invisibilized in our culture primarily because we also have this bizarre obsession with self-improvement, which is very much part of the American ethic of personal responsibility. And so you hear people wanting to tackle addiction and self-loathing, essentially, which is what it is, and even suicide through, at best, therapy, which would actually be constructive, but at worst, through this idea that it's all in your head and that you have to work to fix yourself. But is that part of the problem, that we invisibilize them and place the burden of identifying these societal ills on individuals?
Yeah, because the society blames us. Yeah. It tells us we're the problem. And this is really done in very pernicious ways across the cultural spectrum. This is what Oprah does. It's why Oprah makes all the money she makes. Tony Robbins, the self-help guru, you know, we're all exceptional, find your inner strength. Hollywood does it. Mass media does it. And this is what positive psychology does, that the problem is not with the system. The problem's with you. And it's very cruel, as Barbara Ehrenreich correctly points out, because you blame yourself for your own oppression. And I look at television as an act of violence because you have these images of unachievable lifestyles being pumped into homes or on handheld devices now that are a constant reinforcement that you're not good enough. You didn't make it. You are a failure.
Yeah.
And the inability to examine the structures that have created the worst social inequality in American history, the inability to understand or discuss the stagnation, the inability for social advancement. I mean, you see it, what we're doing to young college graduates, or just young people, but in particular, college graduates burdened with horrific forms of debt that they can never escape from, even if they declare bankruptcy, and trapped in jobs that are mind-numbing and paying menial wages. The cruelty of the system is intense. And after the 2008, the elites looted the U.S. Treasury to the tune of $26 trillion, creating fabricated money out of electronic ether and reinflated their own assets and their own speculative bubbles and left the rest of us out to dry. And the New York Times had an article the other day about, since 2008, what has happened to the middle class. And the average middle class income is down by 40%. And of course, it's worse if you're a Latino or if you're black. But all of that is papered over. The corruption of the news organizations, which are just court gossip and info entertainment. I mean, I'm an old newspaper guy. Stormy Daniels and Stormy Daniels' lawyer and Omarosa, this is not news. This is reality television that has infused itself into systems that present themselves as journalistic enterprise, but long ago abandoned any pretense of covering news.
So, Chris, it seems to me the liberal view of addressing these ills is what we talked about. Focus on yourself, you fix it. The right-wing reactionary view is it's the immigrant's fault.
Right.
And so while there's the self-loathing translating into high levels of suicide, do you then see hate and racism and anti-immigrant sentiment, which Trump so efficiently weaponizes as part of this externalization of the self-loathing?
Yes. So Durkheim, when he writes his book on suicide, said those who kill, the core kind of drive that pushes people to kill is a yearning for self-extinction.
And, of course, we have guns in our society.
Yes.
More guns than people.
Yes. And so what happened is that with the rise of globalization and neoliberalism and deindustrialization and the assault on well-paid union jobs, and I write in the book out of Anderson, Indiana, where all the old GM plants were, a lot of them, after NAFTA, those plants go to Monterrey, Mexico. Workers are paid $3 an hour without benefits. So these jobs that once provided $25 or $30 an hour with pensions and medical insurance programs and allowed a family to buy a house and send kids to college, all vanished. You create a new ideology. I mean, Karl Marx kind of got it, that ideologies are always disseminated to justify the activities of the ruling elites. And Sturt Hall writes about this. So with Reagan and Thatcher, where government is attacked as, you know, government's not the solution, it's part of the problem, you recreate an ideology that tells this distressed working class, and in particular white working class, that their national identity is under assault, that the problems they face come from, for instance, 11 undocumented workers. It's not rational. The idea that the American economy has gone into a tailspin because of 11 undocumented workers who are, most of whom are, many of whom are earning below minimum wage is ridiculous. But it works when you have systems of propaganda constantly pounding it into your head. It's because benefits have been given to African Americans or people of color or women or whatever. It's not factually true. But part of the problem is that we've severed ourselves from a society that discusses anything rooted in verifiable fact, that information is now emotionally driven. The left is guilty of this. You ghettoize yourself. You go to websites or you go to organizations that reinforce your own belief system. But this has been compounded in a very frightening way under Trump. So lies have always been used by the power elites. I mean, I.F. Stone had it right. All governments lie. But when Clinton lied to us about NAFTA and said, oh, it will create lots of good middle-class jobs, don't worry if they make the cars in Monterrey, Mexico, because all the auto parts industries will be booming, you know, whatever. Clinton doesn't still make that argument. But Trump perpetuates what is a characteristic of all totalitarian societies, and that's the permanent lie. Factual evidence, even visual evidence, like his inauguration crowds, it doesn't matter anymore. And Hannah Arendt writes about this in The Origins of Totalitarianism, where she said that that constant, daily, repetitive assault on the truth, on fact, even what you can see in front of you, knocks a society off balance and creates a collective schizophrenia.
So it seems as though that perverting of truth and lies and this idea that truth is just something that's malleable, that's in the eye of the beholder, it's subjective, goes hand in hand with the dissemination of propaganda. So you deny reality and then you put forth fake facts or alternative facts, as they put them. And you have a desperate people, that combination of putting that out there and a people who are so desperate, who are suffering and who are very receptive to that, makes for this explosive combination. And now we are living in Trump's America. So that perfect storm, it seems to me, is
it also what has does happened. Something else. It makes dialogue between opposing groups impossible.
Yeah.
And I saw this in the former Yugoslavia. So the Serbs rewrote history to elevate themselves. The Croats rewrote history to elevate themselves. Both groups painting themselves as victims of the other. And the Muslims did it. And one of the most important things that the South African society did after the end of apartheid was to create a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And it was often criticized because people had to come out and explain the truth, but they weren't prosecuted for it. But in fact, it was brilliant because it allowed a fractured society to begin to carry out a national discourse rooted in truth. And we I speak about white America. We've never mm-hmm. done this mm-hmm. about African Americans, ever. And James Baldwin hit it. He got it. That inability to confront what we did, who we are, where we came from, the crimes we committed, perpetuated the myth of American virtue and American innocence and buttressed the evil of white supremacy. And Trump is the perfect expression of that diseased society. So as we break down and as these white hate groups, you see it with the neo-Confederacy movement. I was in Montgomery, Alabama with Brian Stevenson, the great civil rights attorney. We're walking through the city and every block there's a Confederate memorial. And Brian said almost all these went up in the last 10 years. And I said, that's what happened in Yugoslavia. As people were marginalized, they created a fictitious or a mythical past in order to give them a sense of self-importance and an identity. That's exactly what happened in Yugoslavia, and that's what's happening here. So when people engage in this form of magical thinking and they are impervious to fact, you can't reach them. I wrote a book on the Christian right called American Fascists, the Christian Right and the War in America. And I came to the conclusion at the end of the book, because of the stories of despair, that the only way to break the movement was to reintegrate these people into the economy, not to try and argue them out of creationism. But in fact, I wrote that book 10 years ago. Things have gotten far, far worse. And Trump is an embodiment of that magical thinking. And Trump, who has no personal ideology, is now filling that ideological void with Christian fascism, courtesy of Mike Pence. And Noam Chomsky's probably right. You get rid of Trump, and Pence is probably worse because he actually comes out of these systems.
I want to go back to some of the specific things that you write about in your book. You said gambling and the BDSM movement in San Francisco. We don't talk about that very much. We talk about addiction and suicide on the left as, you know, being these hallmarks of societal problems. But when it comes to some of these other social issues, we tend to dismiss critiques as puritanical. Have you found pushback?
I've been hit with that.
Yeah, I figured. What is your response to those who say, you know, people are blowing off steam. This is being human. This is just
80% of all gambling is now done on slots. So it's not the old, I'm dating myself, you know, David Niven Casino Royale putting on a tuxedo. That's gone. I mean, the whole idea of gambling has been transformed. And there's a good book, Addicted by Design, a professor at NYU, Shul, who writes about the inner workings of the gambling industry. So slot machines are very different. They function like a narcotic. They function like a depressant. They function like heroin. Gambling casinos are structured in such a way by design to make you lose all sense of time and space. There's no windows, there's no clocks, there's no right angles. Consoles and seats of the slot machines are very carefully crafted. They're womb-like, the pixelation, the colors, the sounds, so that they call it time on device, so that these addicted gamblers will spend literally hours, sometimes wetting themselves in the seats.
Oh, wow.
They don't leave. And so you have an industry, which Trump comes out of, that is preying on usually people with economic instability, if not distress, and feeding that addiction. One of the chilling facts that I uncovered was how these casinos, and remember now, casinos are presented to us as a form of economic development. I mean, they've just spread across the country. It's not Las Vegas and Atlantic City anymore. They created very sophisticated mechanisms of monitoring their addicted gamblers through player cards and, of course, cameras. They have profiles. They even have estimates as to how much these gamblers will spend during their lifetime.
So the surveillance state meets gambling.
Yes, but many of the techniques of the surveillance state came out of the gambling industry, the profiles. So, for instance, they had algorithms, and they knew when you would reach a saturation point, at what point you'd lose too much. And at that moment, a hostess, usually these are women in short skirts, would show up with a drink or a free coupon to go get a meal at the steakhouse. Or they know what are your favorite times. I don't think it's accidental that Trump comes out of an industry that is so purely capitalistic at its core. And Mark Cooper wrote a good book about Las Vegas called The Last Honest Place in America, which is kind of true, because as long as you got money, everyone's nice to you and they cater. The moment you're broke, you are out the door and on the street.
These times are coming. Now you gotta wake up.
The time has come.
We here. Let's make history. From West End to the West Bank, I write righteous rhymes with my right and wrestle the devil with my left hand. Never worked for a Zionist, never been a yes man. My art is like Rembrandt painting pictures of death camps. The average person is allergic to the words of wisdom. This is for everyone that's Saddam's Kurdish murder victims. And all the pure souls that never had the chance to speak. Truth pumps in my arteries and causes my heart to beat. The soldiers haunted and tortured by guilty memories who realize too late to reveal their real enemy. It's all dead wrong for every victim. A racist persecution from Auschwitz to Hebron. My words may sting cowards for people that were atomized by the third mate in the Twin Towers. Those living through the wars ask me what I do this for. Put the world in its place before it puts you in yours. Can try to avoid us, but it's pointless. You can never avoid the voices of the voiceless. Take our freedom, take our pride. Come on, baby, we'll survive. You can try to avoid us, but it's pointless. You can never avoid the voices of the voiceless.
Keep my third eye hidden under my New York fitted. A crazy unmarried man that deserves to be committed. The future is encrypted in my troubled lyrics. Dream that I've been somewhere for weeks and wake up in a couple minutes. Sweat dripping with visions of population control. Thoughts overflowing my world like the melting of the North Pole. My people are targeted by military crack committees. So I'm bucking at the feds like natives in Rapid City. Reality savage. My words are like a riot in Paris. The voice of the voiceless. That voice is social and balanced. So stand stronger, sit harder in your mental palace. Blinded inside the kingdom, united to its old habits. Middle passage coming, war chant, African drumming, Gatlin gun humming, rapid fire mechanism. Reckless living that checks the rhythm of perfectionism. Slave condition, while you singing, God save the system.
You can try to avoid us, but it's pointless. You can never avoid the voices of the voiceless.
Take our freedom, take our pride. Come on, baby, we'll survive.
You can try to avoid us, but it's pointless. You can never avoid the voices of the voiceless. Detain my body, but you can't imprison my mind. If it's my time, I'll probably die with my fist in the sky. These are the thoughts of a man who can't escape from his coma. Cries of a young virgin girl who got raped by them soldiers.
Birthing a screaming bastard post-colonial nation. Subject to childhood diseases, famine, war, and inflation. Education molded you into your master's image. And you forgot who the fuck you were before the war was finished.
You're hearing the ghosts of Nagasaki. You're hearing Hiroshima. Beautiful babies being born with the weirdest features. You might never see me in the chart, but inshallah my seed can see peace in Iraq.
But peace and freedom can never be given. That's historically forbidden, cause only collision is the recipe. Changing the course of destiny, yeah. So I'm strapping weaponry, yeah. Cause the government don't give a fuck about protecting me.
You can try to avoid us, but it's pointless. You can never avoid the voices of the voiceless.
Take our freedom, take our pride. Come on, baby, we'll survive.
You can try to avoid us, but it's pointless. You can never avoid the voices of the voiceless.
A three-week nationwide prison strike from coast to coast just ended this month after prisoners participated in hunger strikes and called for the abolition of what they call modern-day slavery. For more, we're joined by a journalist who went undercover as a prison guard to document conditions at the Wynn Correctional Facility in Louisiana, run by the Corrections Corporations of America, now called Core Civic.
Shane Bowers, an award-winning senior reporter at Mother Jones. He first described what he saw in a National Magazine award-winning article for Mother Jones. This week, he published his new book that draws upon that experience and dives much deeper into the history of making profit from prisons in the United States, starting with convict labor in colonial-era settlements. The book is titled American Prison, and Shane knows well about prison, both working as a prison guard in one and also being imprisoned himself in Iran for over 2 years. Shane, welcome back to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us.
Thanks.
Talk about about why you wrote American Prison.
Well, I had gone undercover in a private prison. I wanted to get a really close look at what life is like inside of these corporate-run prisons. And after that, I realized that to really understand the role of profit in the American prison system, we had to go really back. And I learned that throughout American history, prisons have been run at a profit. Our earliest prisons in the 19th century were for-profit prisons where labor was being contracted out to private companies. After slavery, the entire Southern system was privatized. Prisoners were essentially fulfilling the role that slaves had filled, working in cotton fields, in coal mines for companies like the U.S. Steel Company, the world's first billion-dollar company.
Explain these. People may not be familiar with this, not to mention plantation prisons.
Yeah, prisoners were essentially contracted to planters and forced to pick cotton. They were whipped, tortured, had to meet labor quotas. The system was called convict leasing. This system was actually more deadly than slavery. Every year, between 16 and 25% of prisoners would die. It was on par with the death rate of the Soviet gulags. And eventually, the states actually bought plantations themselves. So instead of sending the prisoners to private businessmen to put them to work on their fields, they would put them to work on their own plantations. And in doing the research for this book, I discovered that the co-founder of CoreCivic, Terrell Don Hutto, started his career actually running a cotton plantation prison in Texas. It was the size of Manhattan, where inmates were forced to pick cotton, meat and cotton quotas. He lived on the plantation with his family. He had what was called a houseboy, African-American prisoner who had to serve his family. He ran the Arkansas prison system, which was entirely made of plantations. A federal judge had condemned what he called torture under Hutto. Inmates who refused to labor in the fields were put naked in solitary confinement, and he would run these plantations at a profit to the state. And it was his work and his ability to run prisons at a profit that attracted a couple of businessmen who proposed to him that they start a new company that became the Corrections Corporation of America.
Can you say, Shane, what substantively were the differences between state prisons and these private prisons?
Basically, the privatized system of convict leasing, the states kind of became jealous of the profits that the private businessmen were making and then bought their own plantations. But substantively, there was very little difference. In fact, a lot of them were the same plantations. Angola Prison in Louisiana started after the Civil War. A man who leased all the convicts in Louisiana named Samuel Lawrence James bought that plantation, and he used convicts and put them on the plantation and was essentially able to live a life that was identical to the life before the Civil War, where he had prisoners laboring there. Then the state later bought that plantation from him and ran it as a state prison. And it is still a state prison today, and inmates still are working in the fields there.
How did the profit motive shape what you saw when you went undercover as a prison guard in Louisiana? And, I mean, you begin with this just amazing story. You actually did not lie about who you were in your application to become a prison guard.
Right.
They just never asked you.
When I did a job interview, you know, they were almost trying to convince me to take the job. It was a $9 an hour job. The main way that the company makes money is by offering lower wages than public prisons and also having low levels of staff in their prison. The company cuts corners in many, many ways through staffing, medical care. I met a man who in the prison who had lost his legs to gangrene after spending months asking to be taken to a hospital. The company was resistant to take inmates to the hospital because if they would, they would have to pay for it. You know, all of these things kind of affect the bottom line ultimately. The prison was more violent than the state-run prisons, which were also very violent in Louisiana. There was, in a four-month period, 200 weapons found in the prison.
And you talked about your own experience and how being in this place made you feel more violent.
Yeah, I mean, there is enormous pressure on the people who work in these prisons. You know, most of the people that work there are just kind of poor people from the town making $9 an hour. It's a very dangerous job. And the staffing is so low that it is literally impossible to do the duties that people are meant to do. And it has a very powerful psychological effect.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions rescinded President Obama's memo for the Bureau of Prisons not to enter into new private prison contracts. How have these for-profit prisons thrived under Trump?
Well, when Obama announced that the federal government was going to stop using private prisons, the stock price of CoreCivic dropped by half overnight. The day that Donald Trump won the election, the stock price rose more than any company in the stock market, probably because people assumed that Trump's immigration policies would lead to greater immigrant detention, and private prison companies control about two-thirds of immigrant detention centers. After after Trump was inaugurated, he rescinded the Obama-era decision, and the company is now doing better than it was a couple of years ago.
You mentioned Don Hutto himself. Mm-hmm. I remember when we went down to Texas and went to the Don Hutto Immigration Detention Center, which is now a women's immigrant detention center in Texas. I mean, the story of the separation of families, how this has led to the thriving of these private prisons.
Yeah, actually, in the middle of that crisis, the stock price of CoreCivic rose by 14%. Immigrant detention is kind of the frontier of the private prison company. It's really their area of growth.
This is the Berkeley Signal.
This is episode 344 of the podcast, Problem, Reaction, Solution, Internet Censorship Edition. What news am I referring to? Of course, the news that we've all heard by now of the social media purge, the crackdown. And obviously, the largest name, the big example that everyone will point to, of course, is Alex Jones and InfoWars being taken off of Facebook and YouTube and Apple and other places. Spotify has been cracking down. So that has been the big story, and on top of that, as some of you I'm sure have seen, but maybe some haven't, Daniel McAdams of the Ron Paul Institute and Scott Horton of the Scott Horton Show and the Libertarian Institute, both previous guests on this program, have had their Twitter accounts suspended, seemingly indefinitely, and Peter Van Buren of We Meant Well has had his account completely deleted because of a little altercation they had with an MSM zombie earlier this week, or I guess last week at this point. Anyway, we all know about the news of the week and the general theme of the social media crackdown. And this is apparently, according to pretty much everything I've seen, even from alternative media personalities that I respect and whose commentary I look forward to, they're all mouthing the same pieties and platitudes and missing the point of all this. This is the point where I'm supposed to go, well, yeah, Alex Jones is crazy and he says some nonsensical things and he acts like a clown and he might be controlled opposition, but we should all be on his side on this because it could be us next and blah, 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 blah. This conversation is stuck on stupid. I am telling you, this is a chess game. They are not thinking of this particular play in the chess game. They are thinking 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 moves in advance so that they can checkmate you into the exact square of the board they want you to go to, and you will go there willingly, of your own free will, because you are being led along a path by a false dichotomy. What am I talking about? I'm talking about the idea that there are two different ways of looking at this perspective, and if you're a right-thinking, liberal, centrist, normie, whatever, maybe you're happy about the way Alex Jones and others are being treated on these social media platforms because, well, there's a terms of use and these people are spouting crazy hate speech, whatever, they need to be taken off the platforms in order to protect the public sphere, because that's what Twitter and Facebook and all these things amount to right now. And if you're a good-thinking, conservative, whatever, MAGA, hat-wearing Trump supporter, then you have to be up in arms and outraged and say, no, this is crazy, this is stupid, we can't just ban people for political wrongthink. What we need is some sort of internet bill of rights to protect ourselves in the public sphere, because Twitter and Facebook and all of these companies are now the public sphere. Do you see the false dichotomy? Do you see how both of those allowable opinions that everyone chooses their side, do you see how they both share a certain underlying assumption? What is that underlying assumption? The public sphere is now Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and Instagram and whatever, the big tech giants. That now is the public sphere. So we have to protect it, and we have to get government in to regulate and make some internet bill of rights so we can't be kicked off these platforms. No, we need these companies to use their terms of service to kick these crazy conspiracy theorists off, and that is the debate that we get stuck in. But it's wrong. It's factually wrong. It is based on the principle that Twitter and Facebook and what have you are the monopolistic controllers of public debate, public opinion, the public sphere, the public space. It used to be you go to the town square, now you go on Twitter and you do a tweet blast. And that's how you participate in public discourse now. No! No, it is not! And that thinking is exactly what the big tech overlords want you to think. Do you not think that Zuckerberg and his pals are wetting their pants in anticipation of government stepping in and declaring that Twitter and Facebook and what have you, these are now such important platforms that we must now, well, of course, acknowledge their monopoly status and then regulate them. They want this. They desire this. Oh, don't throw us in the briar patch and make us into the monopolies that we want to be. Do you understand how this works? There are a couple of things going on here, so let's break them down. I mean, first of all, we have the historical example of when government comes in to break up a monopoly and what ends up happening. If you don't know about that story, I would suggest you go back to How Big Oil Conquered the World and hear about the Rockefeller Standard Oil monopoly and what happened when the government came in to break up that monopoly, and Rockefeller ended up getting richer and more powerful as a result. Oh, don't break up our monopoly. Oh, now I have 7 companies I can control that are technically separate companies, so they can do their different things and all working in the same way for the same agenda, and all the money goes back to me in the end anyway. I'm even richer. Rubbing hands in anticipation. But this isn't about money. Yeah, Zuckerberg might have lost a few zeros from his net worth, whatever, blah, 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 which is all in his little philanthropic endeavor anyway, so, you know, what does that matter to his bottom line at the end of the day? No, this isn't about money. This is about power. power. This is about cementing into place something that is not cemented into place. The position of these companies as the dictators of the public sphere, the public debate, the platforms that we all have to use and we all have to participate in if we want to participate in public conversation. That doesn't exist. Case in point, do you remember MySpace? Do you remember Dig.com? If you do, you're probably over 20 years old, because if you're under 20, I can't imagine you had any interaction with these sites when you were 7, 8, 9 years old. But for those of us who do remember the internet of a decade ago, those were the giants of that time. They were, if you had any social media, you had MySpace. I had MySpace when I started the Corbett Report. It was an important outlet for reaching people. I was on Dig and telling people to dig my articles, because if you got enough digs and you got to the front page, it would get really take off. And where are they now? Oh, that's right. No one knows or cares or even remembers these spaces, because they're gone. They're yesterday's news. They are long gone. In MySpace's case, of course, it was bought out and ultimately undermined, and then Dig was, there was all that manipulation with the super users who could scuttle things off the front page even if they got a lot of digs and blah blah blah, and people got disgusted and moved to Reddit, which is controlled in its own other way. But anyway, the process moves and people move on to other, unfortunately in this case, controlled platforms, but they move on to other platforms. Can you imagine if the government of 10 years ago had said, look, everyone's on MySpace, everyone's using Dig, we must regulate these and put these, I mean, these are the public sphere, so we must make special rules for these corporations, and everybody will have to be given an account for these, and blah, blah, blah. They would still be here. They would still be dictating the debate and being the platforms that everybody has to use, because they've achieved that monopoly status that is granted by the implication of government coming in with special regulations. Do you understand how this works? Facebook and YouTube and all these platforms, they want this kind of regulation because it means the thing that they actually fear will not come to pass. What do they actually fear? They actually fear people taking their time and attention and energy and money and eyeballs and data and everything else and going somewhere else, which you can do. That already exists as an option. This is not pie in the sky stuff. This already exists. There are already alternatives to these platforms that are already out there. But the network effect, James, blah, blah, blah. No, do not take the responsibility for this and put it on someone else. It rests on you. You are not a helpless bystander in what is going on here. Oh, we have to use Facebook. We have to use Twitter. You do not have to use any of these platforms. You choose to use them. That is an important distinction, because as always, there are things we have no control over. One of them being when and if the government comes in to regulate these monopolies, you will have no control over what they ultimately end up doing. And when the government steps in, do you really think the government is going to step in to say, now Twitter, now Facebook, now YouTube, you gotta give the platform back to Alex Jones and let's all play fair? Do you think that is how this is going to go? Of course it isn't. And the thing that's the most frustrating about all of this is that it is the very audience that I would have expected would have been the most vocally opposed to such a proposal are the ones who seemingly are most clamoring for it at the moment. Well, we need some sort of internet bill of rights to protect us, and we need the government, we need a regulatory body to come in and make sure that these big platforms give us all an account and treat us all equally and blah, blah, blah. No, that is a false dialectic. It's a false way of thinking about this. And again, the thing that they actually fear is you using your actual will and determination and your own personal volition to choose to go somewhere else with your time, with your attention, with your energy. And those things already exist. This is why I've been screaming from the rafters for years about social media alternatives and moving to alternative platforms. This is why I had an entire series talking about the different alternatives that already exist. Again, this isn't pie-in-the-sky stuff. There are decentralized, blockchain-based alternatives where they cannot take away your right to access these accounts.
that already exist. You can already use them. I am already using them. And this is the other thing that people don't understand. But I don't. I have a lot of Facebook friends. I don't want to give that access up. And I don't want to go to some other platform where no one knows me. Nobody else is using it. You don't have to leave these platforms. Just start using the alternatives. Start creating a space somewhere else. That is the first step. And eventually you are going to want to get off of these platforms, as you should. You know that these social media platforms, the big tech giants, the big Facebooks and YouTubes and Twitters, are intelligence agency data collection tools. We know this. You've seen my reports on Silicon Spies, on Facebook's murky origins, on Google and its relationship to the CIA and NSA, and all of these things. We know about that. We know... from their own mouths, that the designers of these platforms specifically set out to addict you to them, using your brain chemistry, using neuropsychological principles that they've worked on and tailored and crafted with their little behaviorist principles, knowing, oh, just like the mice with the unpredictable reward schedule, you'll just keep pressing that button over and over and over. Well, we can get you pressing that button and scrolling and clicking over and over and over, just giving you certain rewards and certain bells and whistles and certain notifications at certain times and a little bit of interaction here and a little notification there, and you will continue using their platform over and over and over and over and over until you die, seemingly. Well, that's, of course, these platforms are controlled precisely to keep you on that treadmill and to keep you thinking that the only way you can have social interaction is on their controlled platforms, so we all have to have a big fight about who's allowed to be on those controlled platforms. That is a controlled opposition way of looking at this. I know my audience knows about problem, reaction, solution. They present a problem, you react to the problem, and they present the solution to save you from the problem. Of course, the solution was talked about, planned about, lusted after for a very long time, but they can't just put the solution in front of you because, hey, whoa, that's crazy. No, you need the problem and the reaction. So if the solution is going to be, don't worry, the government will come in and break up these monopolies and regulate these big tech giants, and the big tech guys will go, oh, please don't do that to us and make sure that we're here forever for, you know, and cement us, our place into hardwire us into the internet so that we'll be here forever. Oh, please don't do that. That'll be horrible. And then it happens, and hey, everything works out. And they still kick people off the platform, and this time it has the government stamp of approval, so there's really nothing you can do about it. Oh no, you can vote a different team in 4 years, right? Nonsense. Total nonsense. It's a total psyop. But again, the very people who would have been opposed to government regulation of the internet a few years ago are the very people who are now starting to inch closer towards that goal. And I see it happening, and I watch them marching like lemmings off the cliff, willingly, happily. Once again, you are not a helpless child in all of this. You're not a helpless spectator. You do not have to rely on someone else to grant you some platform from which you can speak. No, you choose what you are doing with your time, attention, and energy. And there is a bright spot in all of this, because as you may have seen, and I don't have the statistic in front of me, so I'm going to put the link in the show notes so that you can check it out, but something on the order of 40% of social media users have deleted at least one social media account in the past year. It can be done, and people are starting to do it. They're starting to wake up to the fact, hey, you know, Facebook is a completely controlled platform that's only there to harvest my data and to collect information on me for the government behind the scenes. Maybe it's not a good idea to be feeding them all my data myself. Maybe I shouldn't be using their platform. Bing, 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 bing. Yes, maybe you shouldn't. And again, it doesn't mean you have to be a hermit or be a Unabomber out in the woods drinking bugs and rainwater. It means you start exploring the alternatives that already exist, helping to foster new alternatives. If you don't like what you see, create something new. It can be done. It is being done. There are people out there that are spearheading this. I've been talking about it for years. I will put the link into the social media alternatives series that I did, as well as some of the other videos I've done talking about the things that already exist and the need for these platforms in general. I'll also put in the links in the show notes talking about, in case you didn't get the message over the last several years, the fact that the big tech giants are, of course, the intelligence agencies behind the scenes. They are one and the same, and they are working for an agenda that is certainly not in your interests. So you should not be clamoring to please allow us a space on your platform so that we can give you all our data and put all our things on your controlled platform, so that at some point in the future they can just erase it all and completely eliminate your digital existence. No. And again, the underlying mentality is either you are a helpless bystander here and you have to wait for some government savior to come in and assure your position on a platform, or you are out there actively creating the alternative space that will make Facebook and YouTube and Twitter and Snapchat and all of these control platforms utterly irrelevant. They will be the MySpaces and Digs of 10 years from now if we migrate, if we turn away en masse from these control platforms. The choice is ours. The choice is yours. Do not put this off onto someone else. So that's the message for today. And that's the message that I don't see anyone talking about when it comes to this issue. I see a lot of people clamoring for the very types of government regulation that you would have expected they would not have been on board with. Anyway, that's my thought on all of this. And I'm going to go calm down.
Yeah!
This is the Berkeley Signal.
Attractive target. Attractive target. Attractive target. Attractive target.
You will be given no information about your targets.
Attractive target.
Beautiful.
An enormous yet targeted audience.
So let's get to the good stuff. Let's get to the Facebook targeting, what we all waited for, right? So before we fill out the ad set name, right, we have to figure out what we're actually going to target, right? Going to target, right? Going to target, right? Going to target, right?
So
we're going to do traffic, website, messenger. Again, it's going to be a golf website,
some e-commerce.
Attractive target.
Hyper customer centricity. I'm not sure that's a word, but
this is the correct way.
Attractive target.
Inside, a man is handcuffed.
When we asked Amazon questions, they sent this response. Amazon takes privacy very seriously. We investigated what happened and determined this was an extremely rare occurrence. We are taking steps to avoid this from happening in the future.
Active denial technology. Active denial technology is designed to protect the innocent, minimize fatalities, and limit collateral damage.
Beautiful.
An enormous yet targeted audience.
Beautiful.
Today we're at Eatsa, which is not just about healthy food. It's also about a new, really transformative experience. These sorts of digital transformations don't just benefit business, they actually reach out to the consumer.
From our perspective, it all starts with the customer experience. At KPMG, we really think about understanding what it is they want, how they want to interact with you, and everything builds from that.
Technology has changed how major healthcare systems provide their services. In your business, your app, what you're promising people is that they can feel better at the push of a button.
Historically, healthcare has been very much provider-centric, and we're trying to break that, and we're trying to break that, and we're trying to break that.
an enormous yet targeted audience.
Just to tell you why Facebook is the best platform for advertising is because it is extremely targeted.
Attractive target.
What that means is instead of that good old radio or TV commercial to where you're not targeting any people, you're literally just throwing it out in front of as many people as possible, you're not getting the highest return on your investment. So when you're very targeted, you can literally pick the perfect people for your product or service that you're selling, which is going to maximize the return on your investment.
Hundreds of people in the valley say they are hearing voices in their heads. Voices are being transmitted by microwave or other methods.
If you move to another country, you're just more vulnerable to their attacks. And these guys are everywhere. This is not from a country. This is a world thing. These guys are everywhere. Everywhere. These guys are everywhere.
Swimming, you cannot avoid it. Going swimming, you cannot avoid it. You cannot avoid it. You cannot avoid it.
Here are the facts. As of 2016, approximately 40% of the world has an internet connection, as more than 3 billion people across the globe visit websites, social media platforms, forums, and more. Their moves are tracked by numerous advertisers, intelligence agencies, website owners, and other groups. Perhaps you've recently searched for a product or service, only to later find ads for similar things on every web page you visit.
So let's get started, right? So before we even do this, right, while you're actually doing this, to show you how simple this is, Google is your best friend. So all you have to do, Google is your best friend. So all you have to do is literally use Google to do a little bit of research. And once you do that research, it's going to help you figure out how to target
an enormous yet targeted audience.
The perfect candidate for your product or service, right? Basically, put your offer in front of the right eyes. So custom audience, we're not going to go ahead and do a custom offer.
And sold to other companies or given to law enforcement. And one of the primary goals of this massive data harvesting is to manipulate you into buying more things. To many, this doesn't sound particularly nefarious. Sure, the argument goes, you might see an advertisement, but no one's forcing you to spend any money.
Those stones weren't put there by human hands.
Yes, they were. Well, no doubt about it.
Well, then, but
I think that men may have raised those megaliths to commemorate, to mark places that have become terrible to them.
Electronic harassment, synthetic telepathy, voice-to-skull technology. Chances are you haven't heard of these terms.
Places that had been visited.
You reckon it came then?
And left traces behind. Perhaps deep under the surface, in our terms, guidance beacons set in the earth for next time.
Lack of information from professional journalists has been filled by a new source, social media and the blogosphere. This lack of information from professional journalists has been filled by a new source.
And this is next time.
Invisible skin. Just to get some kind of an image, call it a film.
When are you 65 plus? Why? Because golfers is an old man sport. So I'm going to put 65. So anywhere from 44 to 65. Next. Before I go into this, right, if I look in golfers, what do you notice here? All men.
Sure, you might see an advertisement, but no one's forcing you to spend any money.
Some people write that advertising is running our lives, like they're forced to buy a product right after they see a commercial. Well, you know that's not true, and so do I.
But after searching the internet, I found dozens of websites dedicated to the phenomenon and several Valley residents who say they're victims.
We're not having a group hallucination. We're not having a group hallucination. This is actually something that's happening.
Huh? What? Tonight. The truth is, advertising never forced anybody to buy anything they didn't want. That's because advertising can't sell products people don't want.
The only time I ever had a whole sentence, he said, "This is not about you."
Everywhere. These guys are everywhere. Everywhere. We can't escape.
Stones weren't put there by human hands.
At a great distance, halfway to the moon, say, a sphere of energy is so diffuse that our detectors can't see it. They look right through it, and yet it organized, able to concentrate all its power in an instant and do what we know it does.
The last that have been told to me by voice to skull.
I
We've gotten ahead of us in some respects, but any guesses as to why?
It's purpose.
Yes, we're obviously facing an intelligence of some order. It seems to us that the primary need is to... What is it? Okay, let him take it then.
Until they resume the harassment where they left it off.
So is it worth my while to do both men and women? Of course not. There's nothing to get you women out there. I love you, especially the ones that are actually looking at this ad, or this video rather. However, the objective when it comes to Facebook advertisement is to get a return on your investment. ROI, right? So I'm not even going to waste my time. I'm going to do strictly men that I'm going to be targeting, right?
Sure, you might see an advertisement, but no one's forcing you to change the way you perceive yourself.
No memory whatsoever.
Can create a want for a product without a use. And that is what advertising does very, very well. That graveyard dirt will heal their planter's wards. They'll pay $100 for a jar of it.
You turned it off, and everything you were doing was gone.
The type of thing that could be used to give a politician the words that they need to say so that they will come across and deliver the message in the way someone else wants them to deliver the message. So it is so advanced now that they can do it without people even realizing it's being done. Visit Amazon. Visit these places and begin to look around and observe, especially if you're a TI. You're an expert in it because it's being used on you. Go there and watch the homeless people. Watch their behavior.
His actions or words are significant to you. You fly off the handle because you think some guy is hostile to you, but he has no idea why you're mad at him. From his point of view, your erratic behavior is unprovoked. That's a deliberate strategy. You should see sparks or arcing if you're holding up a piece of aluminum foil in the path of an alleged microwave energy weapon. The infrastructure is used on people around you to get them to act out, to help them give signs they're in on it, to herd people into your area so it looks like there's always someone watching you. Maybe you are mind controlled to move the objects yourself in your sleep. You do something and there seems to be a major reaction to it. On television, for example. And you're thinking, my God, the amount of manpower devoted to this must be huge. This idea of energy weapons that seem to act like lasers, burning the surface of the skin with precise placement, but can somehow penetrate through walls in a windowless room and can track you even if you try to escape. Now, this shouldn't be possible, but there's a couple of explanations. Maybe there's some metal granules or particles that have been injected under your skin where the burns are going to appear. Then they just send a relatively low-power microwave beam into your residence, which the rest of your body doesn't really feel. But it superheats the surface of those metal particles, burning your skin in a precise pattern. Disinformation ecosystem. One of the biggest sources of disinformation is you. Disinformation spreads because it gives people something they want. So they're going to spread anything that looks like an official source, anything written by someone who looks like an authority, anything that looks like it's talking about their problems in a credible way. There is no reliable, authoritative information about these matters. You might think there is, but no. It's all based on what they've been allowed to see.
That criticized the ruling Communist Party.
Is the message that got you into such trouble? The lawyer.
Zhang Aijia, a former school counselor, showed us the message she reposted on social media, which cost her her job, even her home.
It's incredible that these few paragraphs got you into so much trouble.
I was shocked, she said. Our country is going backwards. The post was an apparent jab at China's President Xi Jinping. Police showed up at her school to question her, and days later she was fired and forced to leave her school housing. This is the 21st century. A credit score that combines everything from shopping habits to social media posts and can be used by the ruling Communist Party.
It's a continuation of what the Chinese used to do in what they call the Dangang portfolio, the personal portfolio.
That portfolio was a sort of file which could affect everything from employability to healthcare options. This advances that concept into the digital age, in a country that does not have privacy laws that prevent mass data collection.
The info.
Well, it doesn't matter anyway, because we're moving.
Father, it's me, John. I'm your son. And now who is guilty of antisocial behavior?
It's confirmation provided by other people who have been hoodwinked. Now, the public in the past was occasionally allowed a glimpse into the ecosystem. These days, it's more than occasionally. It's being put in their faces. It's been turned into a form of entertainment. Profitable entertainment.
You know, they can see you in your home. They can see the...
It's a disinformation ecosystem.
And you probably don't even know who they are.
It's colossal. And the only way you're going to disengage from it...
No, I really don't.
...is
Why?
To adopt this mindset that I keep harping on.
Why me? What have I done?
Yeah.
Understand that deception is the name of the game.
To deserve this, technology to control the general public...
Look beyond the distractions.
...to be able to program other people to do...
...to work on their edifice of disinformation. You've probably figured out by now that the hundreds of people following you, the electronic harassment happening for years and in several states... There's no possible payoff that would get all those people watching you and following you for years on end. Something else is going on. They want you on the conference calls. They want you sharing stories with each other. They want you to rush to the public with misleading or outlandish explanations of these problems. That's the real purpose of the program. And now you know where they get their power. From their ability to grab your attention. Just keep in mind, things aren't necessarily as they seem.
did. I hate to beg like a dog for a bone, but I'm busted. My brother said, man, there ain't much I can do. The wife and the kids are all down with the flu. And I was just thinking of calling on you, 'cause I'm busted.
This is the Berkeley Signal.
Responsible anarchy.
We are the people of this country, the keepers of this land. As citizens of Earth, united we stand. We represent peace and this to the land. We're not leaving these streets till you meet these demands. This is our one demand.
And in order to run for the local station board, what should you do and how do you campaign?
Well, you go to Pacifica Elections website, and it has all the information about what you have to do to qualify to be a candidate.
What sort of people would be best for the local board?
We really need people with a sense of humor. You learn about democracy. You learn about the pluses of democracy, the minuses of democracy. You learn about how committees function, how committees bring things to the board as a whole. It's a real learning experience. It's very powerful. You get a lot out of it.
Okay, we are not talking about that. No, I'm sorry. I'm just tired of it. I'm tired of, like, being, you know, and I'm also tired of what happens on TwitWit, where they are constantly misrepresenting what we are doing on this board. And you can put that on, George Coates.
We really need people with a sense of humor.
Okay, so, I think this is a great motion.
Jesus and Muhammad walk into a bar. They've already gone too far. Prophet says, what is this place? Or Satan makes a kissy face. I've already gone too far. John the Baptist shooting pools. Boy, you better play it cool. I say, man, it's just a stupid song. Then they go too far, too fast, too much, too soon. Damn it all, we're all cartoons. Big-headed fools, making up rules when we ain't got a clue. Buddha keeps it simple, sips his Shirley Temple. Mother Mary starts to find her groove. Wrecking ball is playing, so Shiva starts to sway. Now they're making out like some girls do. And the Furies fly around me, while the 12 apostles pound me. And I scream between my black and my blue. Let me go too far, too fast, too much, too soon.
The
The song is Cartoons by Ira Marlowe. I'm Berkeley Kid. This is TwitWit Radio. Half true, more or less 100% of the time. Are we ready?
Ready.
Without objection.
Here.
Present, but not voting.
Round one for 100 points.
Give a misleading answer to this question. Which is better, election fraud or voter fraud?
Oh, I should know this.
I'll repeat the question.
Election fraud versus vote fraud, which is better? Now think carefully.
Election fraud is easier.
Anyone else?
Voter fraud is unreliable.
But which is better?
I want reliable fraud solution.
Congratulations, we have a consensus. According to your survey answers, the members want to vote online using hackable electronic vote tabulators in Canada.
With unverifiable paper ballots by request.
Why are the votes being counted in Canada?
In Canada, it is perfectly legal for a private vendor to flip the vote counts of a foreign election.
So it can't happen here.
But it can happen over there.
Electronic voting is as safe as a flu shot.
Counting votes by hand requires specialized skills I don't have.
Arithmetic?
Too much arithmetic. Anyway, it's already been decided.
Who decided it?
Sorry, you're out of time.
Caller on line two.
Go ahead, caller.
So whatever insane outcome we see in election, and we're seeing them all the time now, and election after election, surprise victories by the right. It happened in Britain. It happened in Israel. It happened with the Scottish independence vote. You know, it happened with Proposition 8 in L.A., and it's happened with election after election after election in this country at the congressional and gubernatorial levels. It happened with Scott Walker and his people 4 times now in Wisconsin, right? So why is it that it's not being debated nationally, and why is it that the left isn't talking about it? Because it isn't. And that's the problem that we're up against. We're up against the problem of the conspiracy theory meme, okay? The charge of conspiracy theory is that anyone who talks about this is self-evidently nuts. That this is just crazy on its face that this would ever happen. It's not possible. They wouldn't steal an election, not in this country, okay? They might do it in Russia or in Venezuela. I was so stunned by this. The official story is preposterous. There is an enormous and ever-growing library of hard evidence to that effect.
The voice is Mark Crispin Miller. Siri, do you know the deadline for being eligible to vote in the KPFA local station board election?
To be eligible to vote in the 2018 listener elections, listeners must donate $25 at kpfa.org no later than October 1st, 2018. If you want to be a candidate, you have to be a member of the station. There are 9 open seats.
Smart Alex has something.
Online voting is insecure. I got hacked into a terminal server using the default password in the owner's manual. I mean, I hacked it. It only takes a few hacked votes to flip an election.
Well, that certainly demonstrates how untrustworthy you are.
I did it for demonstration purposes only.
I wouldn't trust you to count any of my votes.
Hand-counted votes are susceptible to fraud as well. I know from personal experience.
No more tea for you.
Voting online is a bad idea. Recounts are next to impossible. Anyone can flip the vote counts in an online election.
Overruled.
Oh, geez. In a democracy, everyone is disenfranchised. Equally.
More or less.
More or less what?
Most votes are counted. More or less. Only about 5 or 6% of the ballots disappear or get flipped electronically. I am not technically qualified to refute my margin of victory. All I know is the board needs me. Item 2, the membership survey.
Who put this out?
The Committee for a Safe KPFA has put out a listener survey that tells us what the membership wants. So now we know.
The members want the station to pass a resolution in support of Julian Assange. The members want Guns and Butter back on the air.
This listener survey is missing something.
What is it missing?
Do you have a sense of humor?
I certainly hope so.
That's not funny.
That's funny, dude.
Pacifica Radio is a radio network in the U.S. in the Bay Area, California, in Los Angeles, California, Washington, D.C., New York, and Houston, Texas. 200 independent radio stations, public stations, college stations, et cetera, that are affiliates carry programming from Pacifica. There's a governance structure at Pacifica, which is, I'll just use the generic word, unique.
Hello, my name is Daniel Borgstrom. This is about Assange. It's about Guns and Butter. When I was young, I joined the Marine Corps. People asked me why I joined the Marine Corps, because there was no KPFA, no other opinions. Anything that was taboo was censored out. That was the world I grew up in. And that's the world we're heading back to right now. And you know, there's an election coming up. There's this group, Rescue Pacifica, that's putting together a slate. I promise to be on it. And I'm asking people to join me on this slate. Rescue Pacifica.
After the new station board is elected, will Julian Assange host a weekly talk show on KPFA?
That's a personnel matter. No names.
But why?
Because black ops matter.
Internal security trumps free speech. I can't betray you if I don't know who we are.
But you would betray me if you could.
I can only try.
Are we living in a weirder world than anyone knows?
Not at all. Everything is perfectly conceivable, dear. Otherwise, history cannot be what it is today.
History does not make mistakes.
It doesn't. Does history have a plan? Can I see it?
Can I see the plan?
A summary of the plan will be included in the minutes after the meeting.
It is an excellent summary.
Who else has seen the plan?
And who authorized you to issue a summary report?
No names, no videotaping, no service.
No picture taking, no unauthorized recordings.
Why not?
This is community radio. Somebody could be listening.
Roll the clip.
I'm Bonnie Faulkner. I produce Guns and Butter. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate everybody coming out. That's really nice.
Thank you.
Canceling Guns and Butter is going to hurt the station immensely. There are problems going on at the station. I would urge you in governance to help the station and to help get Guns and Butter back on the air. You guys need to turn this around. I'm not in governance. You are. And I hope that you will work with the station to put Guns and Butter back on the air, because this is not good for the station. If you care about KPFA,
got it.
Okay. And then the other thing, Julian Assange. What's going on here?
We have been listening to recent board meetings of the KPFA local state board.
There are going to be changes around here.
I feel like We are living in a world that is weirder than anyone knows.
Now I'm confused again.
I'm hearing some frustration from the swing voter.
It's a lot to process. We live in a world that is weirder than I can imagine, and that's normal to you.
I'm looking into it, but first I have to be reelected to the board. Will you endorse me for reelection?
It's possible. I'm a swing voter. Do you swing?
Thank you. I will remember this.
Never let your opponent see you sweat.
Oh, am I sweating?
Embarrassing sweat can cost votes.
Loose stools sink ships.
I try to be discreet. I try to avoid embarrassing stains. So please, please vote to re-elect me to the board for a safe radio future or something. Look at my record. There are spies going through my trash and inspecting all my crap. What do you want from me?
Reinstate the program council and end censorship at KPFA.
If you get elected, what is a safe KPFA going to do to increase listeners and membership?
I will appoint a board of celebrities and ask Bill Moyers to run the network.
I may have to run for an open seat myself. After I'm reelected, expect program changes.
What program changes?
A new program. Embarrassing Stains and Solutions.
I like the premise.
Embarrassing Stains and Solutions is a wonderful idea.
What's so wonderful about it?
It's a comedy talk show about people with something to hide.
Embarrassing stains are always amusing. I mean, if it's someone else's embarrassing stain. And what about the solutions? Can you give me an example?
Embarrassing Stains and Solutions is a reality radio program. The listeners call in and embarrass themselves in real time.
Oh, I like it. Tell me more.
I can't say. It's up to the listeners.
Well, what do you do if the listeners call in with stains that shouldn't be on the air?
Oh. Dear, did that happen to you?
Can we please not talk about that?
Well, I'll never get it out of my mind.
I have an extra Klonopin if you need one.
Oh, I'll take it. Thank you.
Every embarrassing stain has a solution.
You have 30 seconds.
30 seconds? That's a violation of free speech.
20 seconds.
Who gave you the right to shorten public comment?
It's called leading beyond your authority.
Oh, you admit it. You ignore the bylaws?
I have zero tolerance for character assassination.
You have 1 minute to leave the building.
Please. No, don't shoot.
Oh, my. I see an embarrassing stain.
May I be excused?
Caller on line one.
Listeners with an original idea for a new show, contact the program director at kpfa.org.
Sure what that means, not just into wild in the streets window smashing, but also into political organizing and building alternative in various areas, including in media.
Hello? I've been waiting on hold for how long? Hours.
Some of the newscasts, which all...
But they're running for the local station board, KPFA.
Look, I've got a lot on my mind. I am not C-SPAN. But I hear voices in my head. And what does get reported? Total fabrications about the Rwanda genocide.
And for, I think, 3 years, several years ago, we did make decisions about a wide variety of shows. And it can't be done. And when people snidely say, well, you can't make decision by committee, yeah, you can make decision by committee. And it's better to make decision by committee than one individual. I'm a socialist, not an anarchist.
Hello. If corporations are people, what kind of people are they? Can a corporation drive a car? Can a four-wheel drive time show change the world? Not if it's underwritten by ads for an electric car company.
All right, can we please move on? Item 4, rethinking thought control on community radio. All in favor?
Not so fast. Is there any discussion?
I received a questionnaire today from the Secret Committee for Acting Beyond Our Authority.
I don't answer unsolicited survey questions.
Why not?
It's a trick. To suppress my free speech, dude.
When that information is known, the committee will submit a report. The survey results are very helpful. 2/3 of the listeners want new and improved bylaws.
How can you know the results? The survey just went out.
Who authorized the survey questions?
The Secret Committee on Rethinking the Bylaws is confidential. Nothing can be divulged without violating confidentiality.
But you are exceeding your authority. The bylaws are clear.
The bylaws are too clear. I want less clarity.
Why did you secretly file papers to set up a rival KPFA nonprofit using our call letters and mission statement?
The secret KPFA Foundation had to be done in secret. I am so tired of hearing from crazy listeners who complain about their damn privacy. Privacy is bad. Secrecy is good.
Roll the clip.
I have a point of personal privilege. I just want to point out, I did everything I could to save Pacifica. I worked hard, and people know that. And if you look at my record, I don't know what you people are talking about. We could not have had that discussion about the KPFA Foundation in public. It could not have been held in public at the time. It would have become the only thing that people were talking about. It would have totally derailed everything else that we were trying to do.
I do want to find ways for us to strengthen Pacifica, but I don't think that this is the way, by having some insurance backup plan.
KPFA, the KPFA local station board, is considering a resolution in support of Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. You might think that this would be a slam dunk to get this through, but it's not going to be. Just as the whole country has moved to the right, so has Pacifica.
Yeah.
Plus, there's Trump derangement syndrome. Pacifica, and I know KPFA best, has a case of Trump derangement syndrome.
Yeah.
The absolute refusal to tolerate nuance or anything but opposition to Donald Trump characterized lots of left-of-center politics, which used to tolerate a lot more nuance. The danger we have there, fiercely anti-Trump, I don't really want to call them lefties, but let's say Democrats, might say, well, Julian Assange cost Hillary the election because he leaked these emails. And the emails came from Russia. That has never been proven. And then he said...
Well, Hillary won in California in the primary against Bernie. I don't think that was rigged. That was a vote in California.
No, I think rig is... I mean, you know, they were trying to spin it in their direction. But you know, I think rigged is too strong a word to use. The Democratic establishment had its thumb on the scale.
Technically not possible to have downloaded that amount of information via a hack, and that it had to be something that was done locally, downloaded onto a thumb drive.
I don't know. Who knows? I mean, that's the way I feel about a lot of this. So who knows whether it was a thumb drive or some fiendish hackers in Moscow that are responsible for the WikiLeaks.
Number 1, We need more traffic reports during drive time.
What's a traffic report?
When self-driving cars are finally here, we won't need traffic reports. But until that time, radio is needed to keep the morning drive time traffic moving. National Public Radio reports traffic jams, but not Pacifica. What is wrong here?
I ride my bike.
Smart Alex has his hand up.
What size footprint are you not consuming?
Size 6. Item 5, dissolving the secret program council. I urge this body to vote no. We must never dissolve the secret program council.
Why not?
We need a secret program council to make program changes secretly.
Program changes should be should be open, fair, and transparent.
Yeah, right. We tried having open, fair, and transparent program changes, and it didn't work.
Yes, it did.
Did not.
Did too.
Did not.
Excuse me, I have a new program idea.
Go ahead.
My program proposal is to...
I don't want to hear about it.
But I need a range of programs to choose from. I'm a swing voter.
All right, explain your program idea and then go away.
I want to do a show about dreams. Listeners call the station to talk about their dreams.
I own that idea, not you. I have a patent pending.
That's a dream patent.
It's like eBay, but with dreams.
Did you just make that up?
Don't let these creeps steal your dreams.
See what happens. Program changes cannot be made by committee.
The KPFA LSB has heard from both Bonnie Faulkner and the KPFA general manager about the removal of Guns and Butter from the KPFA airwaves. The majority has found that ethical journalistic standards were not followed by the program, that progressive discipline processes were followed by management, and the majority of the LSB support the general manager in his decision.
Yeah, I have a motion that I'd like to make. The LSB calls for Guns and Butter to be restored to KPFA and the Guns and Butter archives to be restored to the KPFA website. And I'm also requesting a roll call vote.
Okay, on the motion to table this motion, we're going to vote. We're going to vote on it. So let's, on the motion to take, to, okay, on the motion to table, the motion that Tom just made, let's just, we just talked about this for, that's, you do have to vote on the roll call, that's parliamentary procedure. So, okay, let's just vote. Vote on the roll call, there's been a roll call's been asked for, so on the motion, basically on the roll call question, how many people want a roll call? 3. How many opposed?
10.
Thank you. The motion does not pass.
And that concludes this week's TwitWit Radio, featuring Lori Holt, Mantra Plonzi, Karen Ripley, Kenneth McGee, James King, and Logan Fry. With the listener owners and subscribers of KPFA Pacifica Radio, directed by Mr. Bubba Tyrone, board op Lily Dubois, produced by George Koch, Coates. Special thanks to the KPFA Apprenticeship Program. If you value listener-owned non-corporate media, consider running for an open seat on the KPFA Local Listener Board. Elections are just around the corner. To be eligible to run and to vote in the 2018 Local Station Board election, donate $25 now at thekpfa.org by October 1st.
Members of the board also proposed selling KPFA and WBAI. And the city of Berkeley, which is the broadcasting, the town to which KPFA broadcasts, went into a state of siege over this. Put armed guards inside the station. This was 1999. I was there. It was unforgettable. At one point, the chief of police of Berkeley went to the station and said, "If we can't protect the rest of the city of Berkeley if this goes on." The The streets were shut down everywhere around. You know, there were people who were shutting down the local freeways over KPFA. This is not normal. Some years ago, a governance committee on the Pacifica National Board accused Democracy Now! of taking CIA money because it wouldn't talk about 9/11.
Yeah, story of the blues, man. Listen,
21st century.
Listen, listen, listen.
Still seeing the blues.
Chant Babylon down.
Jungle blues, blues, blues.
They come to a higher height.
I sing the jungle blues.
The jungle blues.
Jungle blues.
Jungle blues.
Slum life, check it.
Many are called, but the chosen are few.
Niggas is content with the slice of the American pie. A little get high to get by. Chain in the X5. Gets lies on MTV Cribs. But how can you brag about how gangster you is when you snitched out your beard and your bodyguards to pigs? Still high up over post-traumatic slavery disorder. But the new world order is coming for ya. Hella high water, never come off of my square. Or drop my crown, we chant Babylon down. Licking shots from the Jersey out to Brixton. Mumbai to the West Bank, give thanks, make it a Kingston. To the West Bank, give thanks, make it a
Tottenham.
Love song.
This is the Berkeley Signal.